It occurred to me when I heard the announcement that Howard Zinn had died that how were we as a people, a group of people, or people who followed him or who read his writings or who were mentored by him, whether they knew him personally or mentored by him through his word and maybe videos that they saw, what are we to do, or how are we to respond to the news that somebody that we maybe not even have ever met personally, but in a way loved him, cared for him, and were grateful that he existed, and what do we do with that as a group of people? And I thought it would be appropriate to have a memorial service, and did so. and that's how we got here. So I just thought I'd say that, how we got here. And I've heard, just talking with people in general, and I hope that this service communicates this, and people have said, well, who will take his place? You know, who will be there? Who will guide us, direct us, right? And I really think listening to him and listening to what he had to say about his students, we are to take his place. There may not be one that stands out like him, but as a group of people and a community of people, our voice can stand out and can stand for those values. So when I ask that question, me, you, we will take his place and be his voice. We gather here tonight to remember the life of Howard Zinn, not only his life, but also the life and hope he inspired in millions to learn, to stand, and to speak, and not waver in the struggle for justice. He had a knack and a will and a passion to bring light to areas of history and life that others would prefer to stay in the darkness. He exposed the cruelties of power, and he gave a voice to the victims of history. In one of his last interviews, it was asked of him, how would you like to be remembered?
Battery's on.
Technical difficulties. He was asked, how would you like to be remembered? And he spoke these words, for introducing a different way of thinking about the world, about war, about human rights, about equality, and for getting more people to realize that the power which rests so far in the hands, that the power rests in the hands of people, not necessarily in the hands of wealth and guns, that power ultimately rests with the people themselves, and that they can use it. And at points in history, we have examples of when they used it. The black people in the South used it. The people in the women's movement used it. People in the anti-war movement used it. People in other countries have overthrown tyrannies, have used it. He said he wanted to be known as somebody who gave people a feeling of hope and power they did not have before. And in listening to recently to some of the videos about Howard Zinn and him speaking, he had a knack for bringing the voice to the voiceless, to the people that are not written in history. And an example that struck me when he was talking about the Civil War, he said that the people in the South, then he went on to say, the wives, the mothers, the grandmothers, the nieces, the sisters, never mentioned the men, and if I remember right, down to 8, 9, 10, they were involved in the war somewhat. And he said that these women had suffered so because the plantation owners were growing cotton and not food, and they rioted. So those are the stories that we don't hear that he brings to us. The stories of the Iraqi families that suffer when bombings go on, or in Afghanistan. It's hard to get those stories. The stories of the victims. And who can never forget his autobiographical title, "You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train"? What he did was he told us where that train was going, which really alerts us we better not be neutral, because that train might not be going to a good place. And so I read a lot of words about him, and then I ran across a couple people that wrote some things about him that were critical. And I thought, why now? And the term leftist came up. Leftist. And I thought, well, what is that term, leftist? So I had a response to that. And I wrote, "Why leftist? Why is telling history from the perspective of all participants leftist? Why is fighting for social justice leftist? Why is the fight for equal rights of all people leftist? Why is creating a society based on meeting the needs of all people rather than corporate profits leftist? Why is observing patterns of oppression and calling attention to them in order to create change leftist? Why is saying corporations must clean up after themselves rather than using tax dollars or simply leaving the pollution to permeate the earth so shareholders can make more money leftist? Why is creating a national health care system to meet the needs of all the people leftist? Why is listening to all the voices that a piece of legislation will affect before its final draft is completed leftist? Why is Howard Zinn going back to the city in France, Rouen, that he bombed with napalm and participated in the first experiments with napalm, him going back to visit that city to talk to the victims and owning his sin in it and spending his life energy to prevent those kind of things from ever happening again? Leftist. I don't know why, but when I stand at the pearly gates, I'm going to stand with Howard Zinn no matter the end. We will take time now for anyone who would like to share, if they knew Howard Zinn personally or if they read from Howard Zinn's work and that affected them and how that affected them. You have an opportunity now to speak, take a couple minutes and share that with us.
Nobody but me.
And, there are others.
Howard Zinn worked as a laborer in New York City until he was 27 years old. He didn't go to college until he was 27. Now, I'm not going to refer to him as Howard. I'm going to call him Howie. And the reason I'm going to call him Howie is his first teaching job was at a black female college in Atlanta, Spelman College, and his students referred to it as Howard. That's what they called him. He was fired from that college because he supported the black females in their civil rights, and he got fired for it, you know. And I look at what he just wrote, and I compare it to, you know, significant things. I mean, Upton Sinclair wrote The Jungle to tell how terrible it was for the workers. Of course, nobody paid any attention to care about the workers, but we got the Food and Drug Administration because people were finding out what their food was like, you know. Steinbeck writes a novel, The Great Threat, and it told the country what it was like being, you know, a refugee from the Depression and the dust storms in the Midwest. And another one I rate high with Zinn is Seth Turkle. You know, I mean, his books really talk, you know, about the working class, you know. And the working class, I mean, if you look at it, Milton Friedman said, you know, capitalism has no social responsibility. The only responsibility has to maximize profits for its investors. You know, how do we balance that out, you know? Who was J. Jay Gould said, I can hire half the American workers to kill the other half, you know.
And they are.
And what?
And they are.
Yeah. And so when you, I mean, just look at the history of this country and compare it to other countries, you know, I mean, like our health care. You know, France has the best health care in the world. Why do we adopt theirs? Bank of America says, if you adopted the French plan, you have the best health care in the world, then we would save $600 billion a year. Gosh, we can't do that. You know, I say, and I'm getting away from Zimmer, I'm just talking about progressivism. And I'll sit down after I say this one. I say that if the health care plan that's going through right now is adopted, and it's called a victory, and it leaves the insurance companies in there, it would be like saying, oh, we won World War II, but we're going to leave Hitler, Mussolini, and Tojo in office. You know? So, thanks. I mean, think about one thing, and I told him earlier. When I heard about this at the meeting this month, and I said, I better get Zen's book. I mean, you know, the favorite book, you know, Freedom's History. I put in a reservation for it. I checked Friday. Oh, you're still on the list, but there's a bunch of people in front of you. And I go, right on! People are reading it. And the thing about it is when you're talking and reading it, you've got to educate people. That's what it is all about. It's educate people about history of people and things like that, because how do you know where you're going if you don't know where you've been? You know, and you've got to educate people on what we've done right and what we've done wrong. Well, I got a kid that wants to move to France. Okay, thank you very much. Oh, my T-shirt I wore it on purpose. Does anybody know what?
Wobblies.
Right.
Right on.
You like Wobblies?
Oh.
And I'll show you something else. That's my membership book.
Oh, nice.
And you know what they're doing now? They're organizing, what's those coffee shops?
Starbucks.
Starbucks in New Zealand and in Australia.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Dr. Steve Blythe could not be here tonight. He had a conflict. But he asked me to read this for him on his behalf, something that he wrote about Howard Zinn. Remembering Howard Zinn, A True American by Steve Blythe. One of Howard Zinn's earlier books, or perhaps it was an earlier edition of his People's History of the United States, started with this sentence. A lot of people made a lot of money from the Civil War. You knew right away that this was definitely not your father's history book. Howard Zinn was never afraid to tackle the establishment, and most of the establishment that he criticized preferred to ignore him because they really could not argue the facts about anything he said. Steve Blythe had the opportunity to sit in on some of Zinn's lectures at Boston University. As a college student in Boston, I lived on Beacon Street near Kenmore Square, just a few blocks east of Boston University. Some of us would sit in on his lectures from time to time. His were always classes that had attendance greater than the number of students signed up to be there. Something sure to piss off the establishment types in the campus hierarchy. Zinn never let it bother him, and then after he became famous, Boston University was proud to call him theirs. I marched with Zinn's group from Boston University on the Boston Federal Building back in 1973, after a tremendous rally on the Boston Common, during which Zinn talked about his arrest in D.C. the previous week. Zinn said, on May Day in Washington, thousands of us were arrested for disturbing the peace. But there is no peace. We were really arrested because we were disturbing the war. That's really one to remember. This quote from Daniel Ellsberg's memorial article about Zen is part of his speech I remember well. It was an amazing day in Boston. It started peacefully enough, with about 1,000 of us sitting arms linked around the federal building. Many employees walked away rather than try to work their way through the crowd. After a while, the police charged, wielding long batons. The poor guy sitting to my left was smashed across the forehead as we sat in passive civil disobedience. Blood was everywhere. As the police were wrestling him away, I got up and slowly walked away from the melee and did not end up getting arrested. Now, more than ever, we need to pay attention to Zen's writings. He has always tried to emphasize the need to prevent the usurping of our democracy by those in power. Those in power constantly write and rewrite history to their own liking. Witness the Fox News Network. They work tirelessly to prevent the ordinary people from having a say. Whether that is Eugene Debs arrested for speaking out against the World War I, or those of us who feel we have been silenced by the bureaucracy. Indeed, had I perhaps been a better student of Zen's, I would have realized that running for Congress as an independent, my grassroots candidate, would never work. I should have realized that I would receive absolutely no support from the Democratic Party that only wants to protect its own interests. The last thing the power status quo wants is free thinkers. The most important part of attempting to regain democracy, and I think Zen would agree, is to try to change the system that puts people in power. Right now, we need to support the fair districting referendums as a good start. We need to fight like hell against the legalized corporate takeover of elections and continue to push back against the corporate intrusion into our lives. Money is power, and that is clearly why we can elect a progressive president and yet end up with more war and less health care than we expected, when we expected just the opposite. We need to reread Zen and get to work. Stephen Black. I want to thank you for doing what you're doing here.
I think it's sad that 95% of people who you would confront or meet and say, have you heard that Howard Zinn has died? And, who's Howard Zinn? He's not well known to the establishment. He's certainly not supported by the mainstream media. But when you take the time, when you make the effort to read his book about people's history of the United States, it really it just totally transforms a person, because maybe it's different in the younger generations now, I don't know. But when I came up through the school system, in our textbooks, what we read was all mythic history. It was so glorious. Everything the United States did was just and wonderful. And it's through a few people like Howard Zinn who go back and make the effort to research and to write real history, what really happened, not the myths that are just so bogus, but show that the United States is no different than other nations that glorify capitalism and the dollar, and will justify any action, war, grinding down the population in order to benefit the special interests. And so, reading his book can really transform people into starting to recognize that their progressivism is necessary, and you need to know what is wrong before you can start to change things. And I think his book is sort of a sacred text, the Bible for progressivism.
Thank you.
We are now going to, are there others? I'm sorry. We are now going to join in a progressive tradition, and that is we're going to sing a couple of verses of Bread and Roses.
109.
Verses 1 and...
The books are under your chairs, the
hymn book.
What's the number?
1 and 4.
1 and 4,
verses 1 and 4, and 109. And if you don't know it, stand up, say the words along with it, the words are great.
You have to love about songs like the Bread and Roses is the honoring not only of we need food, but we need recreation, we need art, we need life. And those are part of what it means to be human. I just thought I'd briefly say a few things about his life and then point out something that I think was extremely important in Howard Zinn's life, something that he did, and something that will maybe teach us how to do what he did. I mean, it just didn't happen. He had a way about him, and he had a drive, and he had a passion. And he was born into poverty and fought during World War II. And again, in one of the, I think, the pivotal events in his life was questioning, you know, the role that he had in the first experiments with napalm in 1945. At the end of the war, when he went back to research what that was about, he found that the Germans that were so intent on bombing and afraid of had actually, with the local people, agreed to a truce until the end of the war because everybody was clear that the war was going to be over because the United States and Russia were coming into Berlin. And 3 weeks later, the war was over. But in that three-week period, they decided to bomb that. So in his research and studying that, you know, he was horrified. And we had some of his history in his fight for civil rights and his supporting for the African Americans in the civil rights movement, his anti-Vietnam movement. And my guess is the only reason that he did not get fired from Boston University was because so many people did attend his classes, because he tried a couple times to get the president fired. And then the president one time accused him of arson and quickly dismissed that. So the relationship was clearly antagonistic. But what it does say is that you couldn't keep him quiet. That was for sure. And the thing I wanted to focus on for the next few minutes, what alerts me to it, is from a writer named Christopher Bolus. And Christopher Bolus, if you can remember this or get it, you can find it on the internet, wrote an article called The Fascist State of Mind. And in that article, he talks about how does a liberal democracy, parliament, how do you move that group of people that are governed that way in a number of years to become a fascist nationalistic state. And in that article, he says, first, you must change their inner mind. First, you must create a fascist state within the inner person. And once you do that, it makes it much easier to create a fascist state. So it's more than fascinating reading. It's frightening reading, because when you read it and you look at our country, you will be, if you're not frightened already, you will be more frightened. So I'm not sure I should get more frightened. But in that article, he says that just, and he's a psychoanalytical writer, and he says, just as individuals must go back in their history and look at the traumas of their history, he takes a bit of twist on that. He says that individuals must go back and look at how they were offenders, how they were the intrusive ones as much as they were the victims, because both are injuries and wounds. And then he says further that even the nation must go back in time and look at the atrocities that they were involved in order for there to be forgiveness for the individual and reconciliation within oneself and with others to really carry on life in a clean and a healthy way. So must a nation also do that. So with that understanding, Howard Zinn in 1966 went back and visited that city that he bombed, where I think it was 2,000 or 1,000 civilians were killed. The city had already been bombed. I mean, it was just, when you read the history, just unnecessary, I guess, except to find out what would happen when you drop this new chemical flame napalm. And we needed to know that for some reason. And when he went back, he talked to those people, to people he victimized, to people who were related to people that he killed, and that's important. I think it's important to understand the life of Howard Zinn, because he said, I did this. Not the United States of America. It was not justified by war. It was not justified that I was caught up in a war movement and we had to have victory over the fascist. He didn't excuse himself. He said, no, I participated in this. And I did this. And I think that's absolutely crucial that we learn that from Howard Zinn's life, that he could go back in his history to where he was an offender and face people that he had victimized and claimed responsibility for. And then when you look at his life after that, what he did was he offered us, I think as a nation and as a people, as much as we want to identify ourselves as citizens of this country and claim the goodness of that heritage, Howard Zinn's life says you also have to deal with the not-so-good things that your nation has done, or you will do it again. And so what he did was, in his book, The People's History, the Howard Zinn Reader, and now the new book that's out, The Voices from the People's History, what he did was, he gave us an opportunity as citizens to look at ourselves as citizens of a nation that claimed that heritage of that nation. He put a light on the darkness. He put a light on what was hidden. And he said that as a people, we have to claim this. Because if we don't claim it, it justifies us doing it again and again and again. And as some of you have shared, as long as we're in school reading the glossy history that has no depth to it, that only shines on the glory, our country, we have done it again and again and again. And we are now, today, in the process of doing it again and again and again. And so Howard Zinn says, wait a minute, stop. Let's look at all of who we are. We are not only the liberators, and we not only did good things, we are also the oppressors and the invaders, and we need to own that and feel that and do something with it. And listening to him for a period of time, he was working on separating just cause from just war. He said this nation merged just causes with just wars. And as soon as you find a just cause, It was reason to have the just war. And he said, because when he's looking at history and he started asking questions, he calls them the three holy wars, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, and World War II, the wars you never question, you never talk about. He said, was there another way to accomplish this? He said, other countries got independence from England without going to war, Canada, and they're doing just fine. He said, other countries ended slavery without having a war. He said, so we need to question what we're doing before we go to war. He said, because then we need to take in the full cost of that war. The death to the fathers, the death to the mothers, the death to the children, the destruction of the land, the destruction of the buildings. That's got to be a consideration too. You can't just say it was war and that excuses the behavior of everybody in the war. Howard Zinn makes us look at that. That that's not okay. He calls us to have empathy for the people who are victims and have been victims throughout history. And by having that empathy and by feeling the other side of what has been hidden from us in our history books and feeling the lies of the other side of that, he said, we will be reluctant to do that again. And we will look for alternatives. And I didn't quite put it together until putting this service together and just thinking about his life. And I thought, and you know, sometimes I'll go back to him and say, I thought, what a priest he was. Not a priest like the royal priesthood it talks about in the Torah, that the royal religion that and the state religion that goes along with the imperialistic empire, because wherever you have an imperialistic empire, you have a state religion. Not that. But what a real person, priest, minister, healer, therapist, historian. A historian who said, you can't be objective. As a historian, how can you be objective as a historian if you're a real human being and you read victimization as you read? You can't do that. And I thought, do we know that he was healing our nation and trying to heal our nation in his work? Just not fighting for justice, but calling us back to our abuses so that we could heal ourselves within as a nation. Do we know that about him too? That he was somehow, in the classic sense of the word, a healer, a shaman, if you will. I'm not sure the right word, but something fits there that's not quite attached to him yet. But it is there. And I know from reading that Bolus piece and reading other healers that Howard Zinn was also in the process of healing not just himself, not just his students, not just the people around him, but it was an effort to heal this whole nation so that we could behave better and that we could be a better people. And to me, that's the meaning of his life, for us to be a better people.
Could I just say one thing?
Yes.
I forgot to mention. There was somebody... His name's Josh. He works for the AFL-CIO National in Florida. He's in his 20s. I said to him, how come you got a labor movement? And this is what he said. Howard Zinn's people's history. That's why I did. You know? And I just...
We will have one more song and another reading. And that will be the end of the service. The next song is on page 121, verses 1 and 2. We will build a land.
Oh,
seated. He is with us still. In the struggles we choose for ourselves and the way we move forward in our lives and bring our world forward with us, it is right to remember Howard Zinn, who gave us strength in his choice of living. It is right to name the power of hard lives well lived. We share a history with Howard Zinn. We belong to the same motion. He was also strengthened by what had gone on before. He too was drawn on by a vision of what might come to be. Those who lived before us and before Howard Zinn, who struggled for justice, suffered injustice before us, have not melted into the dust, have not disappeared. They are still with us, as he is still with us. Their lives they lived, then that holds us steady. And when we listen, we can hear his voice saying, up, rise up. His words remind us and call us back to ourselves when we get distracted by this world. His courage and love invoke our own. We, the living, will carry Howard Zinn with us. We are his voice, his hands, and his heart. We take him with us, and with him choose the deeper path of living. The service is over. Thank you.